Chapter 7. Report the Results, Part 2. Only an hour after the incident in the hallway, Jim was sitting at the computer console in the Astrometrics Processing Lab help desk, trying to read through another dissertation on interstellar solidarity movements of the Beta Quadrant.
"I know you are watching me," Jim said to the empty room, unsurprised when a head peeked out from behind a shelf.
"Senek, I thought we had a deal."
"Our agreement was that I obtain permission to observe you. That has already been obtained, and I was not made aware of any necessity to renew said permission," Senek said, still standing near the shelf several meters away. "In either case, I have not been conducting scientific observations."
Jim waited silently, watching in fascination as Senek wrestled internally with something. He walked towards Jim's desk and handed him a pad. "I have made a separate agreement with Spock. I was to be transparent in my efforts until the time it would interfere with the objective nature of my observations," Senek said. "I see now that my role as a scientist has become compromised, and it is only logical to end my study."
Jim took the offered pad, recognizing it as the one that Skirall had grabbed from Senek an hour earlier. "What is this?"
"My research and observations of the last 5 weeks. It is unfit to publish," Senek admitted, a trifle woeful.
"But why give it to me?" Jim asked, simultaneously wary and intrigued by the imagined contents of Senek's study.
"My hypothesis was sound, as evidenced by my data," Senek said earnestly. "I believe this study may be of value to you."
"Why?"
"Are you going to accept a commission on the Shenandoah?" Senek countered.
"I don't know. It's a big decision," Jim said, deciding not to question how the young Vulcan knew about the potential offer from Captain Cho.
"Then you will want all the data available to make the most logical decision," Senek said.
"It can't all be about logic and data, Senek. It's about what I want for me, for my career."
"And the people you care about," Senek added.
Jim blinked, surprised by the Vulcan boy's insightful answer.
"Yes, that too."
Senek nodded and raised his hand in ta'al.
"Peace and long life, Cadet Kirk."
Jim raised his hand in a passable salute in return.
"Live long and prosper."
No less than 30 minutes later, while Jim was intently reviewing the words on his screen, the prickling sixth sense of being observed returned. He looked up, surprised to find Spock standing at his desk, hands clasped tightly behind his back, expression blank.
"I apologize for interrupting your studies," Spock said, void of any trace of emotion.
"Oh, it's not studying. Senek was here. He wanted me to read his research paper," Jim said, pushing the pad away.
"Are you okay?"
"I am well," Spock said, but his posture said otherwise.
"Is Skirall?"
"He is under review by Academy Security and will be appropriately disciplined," Spock said.
"What did
you need to know?" They both stopped, and Jim nodded at Spock.
"You first."
"I need to know if you are having relations with Cadet Skirall."
Jim's eyes widened almost comically.
"Did he tell you that?"
"No, and that is not an answer."
"Well, the answer is no," he said, now glaring. "You thought I was seeing other people?"
"I made no assumptions. However, it is not an unreasonable possibility," Spock said calmly.
"Why would it be reasonable to think something like that? Who would I be seeing?"
Jim stood up, slamming his pad on the desk.
"More logically, when would I have the time?"
Spock opened his mouth, but nothing came out for a moment.
"I see I have angered you. I apologize. It was not my intent."
"Then make your intent clear," Jim said. His voice sounded much louder in the nearly empty room.
You have not asked to formalize our relationship, Spock said. I would not have you feel obligated to do so, nor would I want you to feel compelled in light of your possible commission aboard the Shenandoah. It is an excellent opportunity and may meet your short-term needs at this time.
My needs, Jim muttered.
The anger at the underhanded suggestion was boiling to the surface. You think I was looking for a short-term one-off with the Shenandoah and couldn't handle a bigger commitment like the Enterprise? Well, I really like the Enterprise. More than anything, really. All this time, I've been waiting for the Enterprise to ask me to commit, because I hear that's the way it's done. Did you ever think of that? Spock recoiled a half step at Jim's words.
I do not believe you are speaking about starships anymore. Just then, one of the machines in the back room beeped, and Jim threw his hands in the air.
I give up, he said to the empty room at large, and turned to do his job without giving the surprised Vulcan another look. Jim leaned over the large machine and was surprised when a hand abruptly turned him and pressed him into a wall.
You can't be back here.
I am not giving up, Spock insisted, his hand raised, caressing the side of Jim's face. I would not want you to dismiss me based on my poor behavior just now. Jim's breath caught, forgetting what they were arguing about. Spock was touching him, finally.
You said yesterday that you always knew where you stood with me, Spock said, leaning in, lips almost touching.
Beside me. I would have you stand beside me.
Even on the Enterprise? Jim asked, looking firmly into the dark brown eyes.
Anywhere, Spock whispered, and Jim closed the gap between their lips with a satisfied groan.
Spock eagerly and clumsily returned the kiss. Jim threaded his fingers through thick black hair, delighting in the curve of Spock's ear and the small noise he made when Jim nipped at his bottom lip.
Spock's other hand reached beneath Jim's uniform shirt and painted a wide path across his lower back, making him groan and grind his hips into Spock's. They broke apart when the help desk computer chimed, alerting Jim that a patron was at the desk. He was grateful they were both hidden from the view of the outside room.
Oh my God, Jim groaned, this time in defeat, resting his head against Spock's chest.
This is the boring part of the library. No one comes here. Spock took a step back, straightening his black uniform and running a hand over his slightly mussed hair. Jim couldn't help but grin at the sight. He'd done it. He messed up those perfect Vulcan bangs.
I'm aware this might not be the most opportune moment, but am I correct in inferring you wish to engage in a mutually committed and exclusive relationship?
Jim smiled, smoothing Spock's shirt for good measure.
If you can't infer that, I obviously wasn't doing it right.
Spock stared at Jim a moment in wonder.
If you are not otherwise occupied, I invite you to my home for dinner.
Jim nodded, still smiling. 1800, after my shift? Spock nodded shortly and turned on his heel out of Astrometrix without another word, leaving Jim to calm down and greet his record-breaking third visitor in 1 hour. Jim and Spock sat opposite each other at the small table in Spock's living area, staring at each other and not saying a word. The tension was thick, and all Jim could think about was dragging Spock by his lapels across the table and seeing how far down he could coax that delicious green flush from earlier.
The soup is delicious, Jim said finally, breaking the silence.
It is the Lady Amanda's recipe, Senek said from the kitchen. She advised me to include more salt to enhance the flavor of the traditional Vulcan dish.
Oh, well, please relay my compliments to your mother, Jim said to Spock.
Spock nodded and slowly ate his bowl of soup, occasionally glancing back into the kitchen area where Senek was chopping vegetables.
"How many courses are there?" Jim whispered,
which was for naught, as Senek's Vulcan hearing picked up on the question. 7, Senek replied, "or more if my penance is unsatisfactory." Jim repressed a sigh. He had been hoping for a quiet meal with Spock, unaware that Senek had appropriated the evening for his demonstration of Vulcan guilt toward an honored guest. 7 courses of food prepared for the appreciation of the offended. Judging by Spock's demeanor, this was not how he planned the evening either. Senek appeared at Jim's elbow with a basket of freshly baked bread. "Cap," Senek explained, and set it on the table. "The Balcra is almost ready." "Senek, I'm not even upset," Jim said again. "This is unnecessary, illogical even." Spock merely raised an eyebrow at Jim, as if to say, "You think I didn't try that?" "I must reiterate that I now see the invasion of your privacy as a grievous error on my part, and in my zealous pursuit of science, I neglected to be sensitive to the harm or discomfort I may have caused you. While you are willing to overlook this, I cannot allow the error to go unaddressed." "Then perhaps you should be serving your penance differently," Jim suggested. "The human way, indifference to my cultural needs." Senek perked up at that, turning around and waiting for Jim to explain. "You need to apologize and then do me a favor." "A favor? Something I might not usually do in usual circumstances, in an act of goodwill. This is highly illogical." "Fine, it's remuneration," Jim said, and that seemed to appease the young Vulcan. "What I need is privacy. You in your room, and no coming out or eavesdropping until the morning. Replicate some headphones if you need to, but your cousin and I need to speak in private." "As the walls are soundproofed in the standard way, headphones will be unnecessary," Senek said, turning to take a casserole out of the oven. He deposited it on the counter to cool and removed the exceedingly large oven mitts and turned to address Jim. "Cadet Kirk, I apologize for my behavior the last 5 weeks. Observing you in your environment, appropriating your work and academic records, entering your dormitory, and distributing surveys among your living relatives." Jim was speechless. "You broke into my dorm? And talked to my mom?" Senek flushed green. "I did not enter your room, merely the building." "But you contacted my mother. She filled out a survey?" Senek nodded. The data compiled from Winona Kirk and the Lady Amanda were used as... "Why would my mother be relevant in your data collection?" Spock said, suddenly finding his tongue for the first time. So Spock wasn't aware of the true nature of Senek's scientific endeavors either. Senek's eyes widened in realization. "I am mistaken, Tomasu. There are 2 parties I must make amends with this evening. Spock, son of Sarek, I have harmed thee." Senek intoned the traditional words for the second time that evening. "And seek thy forgiveness in..." "I request the human apology as well," Spock interjected, an almost brittle tone to his voice. "There's no need to list your grievances. I will hear them later. Go to your room. Now." Senek nodded, giving one last look at the couple at the table, and went to his room and closed the door firmly. Jim sighed, and then glanced over at Spock. "Kids, huh?" "I do not believe all Vulcan children are as he is," Spock said. Jim grinned. "I think that's why I like him, and I can't even be mad. I mean, if he hadn't brought us together... who knows how or if we would have met?"
"How indeed."
20 minutes later, Jim found himself being walked backwards towards Spock's bed, his hands anxiously tearing at the blue tunic Spock seemed to favor.
"Are you sure he can't hear us?" Jim asked again.
"Yes," Spock murmured into the skin of Jim's neck, where he was nipping a trail up to his ear.
"And he hasn't bugged your bedroom?" Jim added.
Spock stopped his exploration of Jim's neck immediately, eyes wide.
"You don't think..."
"If you do not object, I possess a tool that will confirm no surveillance equipment is installed," Spock said.
Jim could only nod.
Before Spock left, he gave him one more deep kiss and left Jim alone in the bedroom. As simple and standardly human as the living area was, Spock's bedroom was completely decadent and filled with Vulcan treasures. The sumptuous red wall coverings and ornate statues all spoke of a homeworld far from Riverside, Iowa. Jim towed off his socks and flopped on the bed, which was surprisingly soft, save for something that was digging into his back. He reached behind his back and pulled out the forgotten pad. Not wanting to pry, but when the words, "erotic bliss," rising under her like the fire plains of Kerr, caught his attention, he could not stop reading. When Spock returned with his device, he found Jim sprawled on his bed, one hand on the pad and the other over his mouth, muffling his chuckles. It was part of Senec's Terran Literary Artifact Archive, Spock explained, almost apologetically, alerting Jim to his presence. Jim looked up and smiled broadly. He thought to share the stories as instructive, but I have not found them useful.
"Good, because it's complete nonsense, you know. No one has sex or romance like in the books or Hollows."
Spock's brow furrowed slightly and turned on the scanner and set it on a tall chest of drawers. "I find myself grateful for that. The descriptions were unusual, and the biology was quite illogical."
Jim had finished reading the part where the many colors of passion entwined in their rainbow of love, and had to agree.
The scanner beeped. "There is no surveillance equipment in the general vicinity," Spock reported, and Jim sighed gratefully. He really didn't want to drag Spock back to his dorm room and kick out Bones. Jim set the pad on the bedside table and stood up, taking Spock's hands. Jim gave Spock a fond half-smile.
"You know, I thought Vulcans didn't like to be touched. I was always so afraid to touch you."
"It is true that touch is a very intimate thing, save between family and bondmates," Spock said quietly, taking one of Jim's hands and tracing the outside of his hand with his two fingers. "This is Ozesta, how two Vulcans would kiss."
"Ozesta," Jim repeated.
"You're my first Vulcan kiss," Jim said with a smile.
"And you are mine," Spock said simply, which brought Jim up short.
"Your first? You mean you haven't?"
"I have never engaged in a romantic or sexual relationship," Spock admitted. "I would not if I did not feel..." Spock trailed off, unsure of the precise foreign emotions he was experiencing.
"I know," Jim assured him. "Me too. I mean, I've never felt like this with anyone."
Spock nodded and then returned the gentle caress with renewed interest. "If we were doing all this the Vulcan way, what would happen?"
"I would have offered Nah my proposal of marriage days ago, and if you accepted, I would bring you to my father's house and present you as my chosen mate," Spock said, rapt attention on Jim's fingers caressing his own. "We would have a bonding ceremony, and we would be Telek, bonded and married." Jim pondered that while exploring Spock's hands.
"Is that what you expect of us one day?"
"Jim, we are not a Vulcan couple, and I have no such expectations of us," Spock said earnestly. "We are together. It is enough." "Together," Jim repeated. "I like that." He hooked his two fingers around Spock and used them to lead him back to the bed and spent the next few hours showing Spock what else together could entail. The next morning, Jim opened an eye to see a rumpled-looking Spock, complete with green-black stubble, sprawled over three quarters of the bed. Jim nudged the stray limbs out of the way and laid his head on the space between his shoulder and chest. Apparently, Spock did not wake gradually. As soon as Jim's head made contact with his chest, he jolted and looked down at Jim with wide, alert eyes. "I overslept by 1.8 hours, he announced, disbelief evident in his voice. "I don't have class for another hour. Are you running late?" Jim mumbled, snaking his arm around the other's torso, feeling the steady heartbeat in his side. "No, I am unused to oversleeping. It is quite unusual." Jim moved his head to better look up at his lover. "We did many unusual things last night," he teased, waggling his eyebrow for effect. "All of them worth repeating." Spock's ear tips flushed, which only made Jim smile at the memory of that flush extending down his neck and past his clavicle. Jim traced every inch of it with his tongue and discovered his Vulcan was slightly ticklish. "I'll be right back," Jim said. He gave the shoulder a quick kiss and swung his legs down, finding his clothes in a heap with Spock's. He fished out his underwear and trousers, intent on making it to the bathroom. Once he shimmied into his clothes, he threw a saucy wink to Spock, who was unabashedly watching him dress, and quietly opened the door to sneak down the hall to the bathroom. As soon as he turned around, a short figure was at his elbow. "You have engaged in coitus," Senek announced loudly. Jim flushed with embarrassment and gestured for him to be quiet.
"You are supposed to be in your room," Jim hissed.
"It is morning. My penance is complete," the boy pointed out.
"Yes, it's complete, which means you must have learned something about the private lives of people around you," Jim whispered pointedly. "It's none of your business what adults do. Now leave me alone until I've had my morning coffee."
Senek stepped aside to allow Jim to amble to the bathroom. "Cadet Kirk, while this shall never make it into my final results, I am pleased to note that this behavior supports my hypothesis." "Yeah, great," Jim grumbles, still incredibly embarrassed, but much too happy to let it get him down for long.
Captain Pike leaned back in his seat behind his desk, staring at his Vulcan officer. "And this relationship is romantic in nature?" Spock nodded once, ramrod straight in his seat. "Yes, we are engaged in a romantic relationship." Pike took the pad and started to read. "The interspecies humanoid hypothesis has long been used to predict romantic and sexual interspecies relationships between all gendered humanoid species. This author has sought to illustrate how this hypothesis can be refuted using biological principles of heterospecific biological cues. The collected objective data was fitted into a multivariate logistic regression model, denoting each set of environmental and biological covariates." "An academic paper?" Pike asked. "Why are you giving me this?" "A promising scientist has data that supports that a relationship between Cadet Kirk and myself would not only benefit ourselves, but benefit our vocation and community." "Spock, do you need statistics to determine if you want to date someone?" "No, sir," Spock replied. "But it certainly helps." "Well, that's great," When you two get hitched, I expect the prenup to be in a peer-reviewed journal. Sir? Sarcasm, Commander. Permission granted. I want Kirk aboard the Enterprise next month for command training with the other command track cadets, and I'll recommend him for lieutenant upon graduation. You're dismissed. Thank you, sir, Spock said, and walked out of the office, an almost discernible bounce in his step. Pike waited until Spock had closed the door to scroll down to the bottom of the paper. Reaching the conclusion that both Subject Spock and Subject Kirk, by all measures of objective data, are a superior combination, it is the opinion of this author that, given the opportunity, their emotional, physical, and psychic wellness would maintain at an optimal level for the duration of their existence. And they lived happily ever after.